When signing Wayne Rooney is maybe not as good as signing Samuel Armenteros, it's That's MLS, the North American Soccer Podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and while Nick Thornton is away, Ricardo Bordalone is here again as a guest host.
Happy to be here.
How did you enjoy this last week of games?
There were certainly a lot of them. I'm just glad I wasn't a Revs or Seattle fan having to watch that dire game.
Yeah, Seattle had a rough one in like the. Now, did they also play midweek as well? Yeah.
Yeah, against Colorado, which they got a win on the road.
So we had what I felt is kind of catch up, especially catch up for Seattle and Toronto in the middle of the week. The first game that took place on the Tuesday was Houston versus LAFC in a 2-2 draw. I thought that was kind of we talk a little bit sometimes about draws that are maybe not as, like, draws that are a little like losses. And for LAFC, I think it kind of was. But for Houston, this was definitely a big fight back at home.
That game was kind of a weird time for a game in the middle of the week.
Tuesday. You don't see too many Tuesday games.
No, especially I feel like the long weekend sort of screwed things up there for people. But definitely both teams, they seem to have a lot of fight this week. I think I actually just missed this game altogether.
You had LA score early with a no-look pass, leaving Latif Blessing with lots of space. The main, the key thing is that you had Blessing and K score with LA scoring very early. And then it was kind of, have you ever, seen a game where it's kind of like on the 89th minute or the 87th minute and somebody says, oh, no way a team is going to get two goals. Why are they still trying? No way a team is going to get two goals in such a short space of time. But indeed, Houston got, I believe, both of their goals in extra time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably went to bed early on this game.
The other big, we were just kind of going to breeze through the key takeaway points in those midweek games. Literally did sleep on the Minnesota-Toronto game. Like, I tried to start watching it. On demand, and then I realized that I'd slept through the first Toronto goal. So I tried to watch it again, and then I fell asleep again. So...
Yeah, this was definitely a game where it seemed like it was over, and I just stopped paying attention to it. And then all of a sudden, I started seeing a bunch of tweets about, oh my god, I can't believe Toronto might actually do this. Which, that would have been sad for Minnesota.
Essentially, Minnesota ran up on them, I think, something in the realm of 4-1, right? And then TFC scored twice, but they started much too late. Minnesota scored twice, the 8th and 13th minute from Darwin Quintero and Miguel Ibarra. I feel like... This was the key takeaways from this were that Giovinco is still doing it with an amazing goal on the Toronto second goal, and Quintero scored a hat trick that was really great. But we have talked a little bit for Toronto about their attempt to sort of drag their way back, and I feel like Minnesota is not, if they have any designs on making it to the playoffs. This is kind of like not where, or even just the idea that Toronto is still kind of, it can achieve any something like the level it had last year as long as it makes it to the playoffs. This belied that vision a little bit.
Yeah, I feel a little bad for Toronto in this one because really Quintero beat Toronto. I mean, he just embarrassed the keeper on three of his goals, and I couldn't really blame Bono too much on those. So I'm not completely ready to write off Toronto based on this game, but certainly they must have been looking at it like they needed to pick up some points here.
We also had in the midweek a LA Galaxy 2-2 to DC United. Another result where LA scores some beautiful goals but cannot hold it in as Matic scores late to earn the point.
Yeah, I think what was really unfortunate for DC here was just how much of a liability Fisher was. He really stood out on Galaxy's two goals, and even when DC has a little bit of a better game, as long as I still have like one very weak point, Galaxy Stars are going to be able to completely make him look foolish. And yeah, Ibrahimovic is going to score anytime he's matched up against someone who is going to leave him space like that.
We had Dallas versus Atlanta in a game that I kind of thought was an inc Dallas did the fight back. I think went down 2-1 and then came back to win 3-2 in another incredible home result that I think when you see a team like this is these are two teams that are contenders that you could definitely see as potential final contenders.
Yeah, very happy for Kindle here, obviously, being the Canadian, scoring two goals late. I think a draw would have been pretty fair, but both these teams looked really organized. Atlanta shouldn't really be too disappointed with the loss, even though it did come pretty late. But it was really just a showcase of how both these teams have a lot of talent and can just open up space with little clever turns and back heels, and that's where a lot of the goals came from. Just didn't seem like there was much there, and all of a sudden, Martinez does a clever thing, and all of a sudden he has a goal or an assist.
You were the one last week who was like, yeah, they should bring on Teshio Akindele, when I was kind of being a little glib about it. And you were absolutely right, as he scored the two goals 2 minutes apart to get the final win.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that is just Canadian fandom as well, but certainly Dallas hasn't figured out how to make things work in the spot where Diaz was. Benacotas did get a goal, I believe, but it still doesn't seem to be like the attack's flowing through that center now that Diaz is gone.
Also, we had Toronto's road to redemption. It had been a lot more bumpy, but Seattle was able to get a road win away in Columbus. With a ball that was okay. So this is the thing. The goal that got me the most was this. Tim Howard tries a short goal kick. On Seattle's go-ahead goal that he's dispossessed very easier on Bruin. Why would you do a short goal kick? Why would you do it?
Yeah, especially with like three Seattle players in front. And just Gashi, that was such an embarrassing poach on him. I kind of feel embarrassed for him.
Yeah, and it's tough. It's tough because you don't want to constantly complain about Tim Howard. Tim Howard is not like some awful person, like some awful player, but these mistakes keep cropping up.
Yeah, I don't think though that Seattle should take too much away from this game because there were some very comical errors on both sides. Some that are troubling for their defense and also some that resulted in them getting goals out of it. And really, like Frey handed them Seattle the win here. So I don't think Seattle should feel much better about their midweek game than Toronto did.
So, we talked a little bit about Sporting Kansas City's difficulties last week against Montreal. And they had, in their midweek game against Real Salt Lake, a game that I really feel like they let spin out of control. I thought they especially had it. Daniel Chaloui scores the first goal on the 20th minute. And then they ship three straight goals to RSL, a team that, while good, has not necessarily always lit it up. But I feel like something went crazy there and something went wrong.
Yeah, this is actually SKC's first loss of the year when they've scored first. So a little bit of a mulligan maybe for them. RSL obviously loves to just run rampant down the field the way they have, and SKC didn't really have a response to it. Of course, if Rusnak didn't just completely ruin his Pamaica try, when that penalty could have been a little bit closer.
Oh my god, that was so good, but also so bad.
It's like he's seen people do it, but doesn't understand why it can work. Like, you gotta go fast and with your head up, not sort of slowly looking at the ball and just kind of boink.
Yeah, Albert Rusnak tries to unleash the Pamaica kick, which is a short, kind of like a short chip of the keeper, where you make the keeper dive early on a penalty and then you sort of whoop it up the middle. But it did not fool goalkeeper of the year, Tim Melia, a friend of the show, because I ran into him once at the MLS Cup final. it did not fool him for even a second. It kind of made him look, it wasn't, it did not cover him in glory in that moment. But also later, I'm on the record as being a fan of the face-touching red card. and yet again, Shallowy got his, I believe he had been on a yellow, but I think it was a straight red for yeah. face-touching in the 90. He just sort of got his hand up in the facial area, which the officials are sending off 100% of the time this year. And then 4 minutes later, Espinoza gets sent off. While the team, to have two players sent off when you're in a 3-2 position and then to concede a penalty 5 minutes later, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, it all just, the wheels really fell off of this one for them.
So we did it. We made it through the sort of the opening course. Now, the main course. We had what was for Vancouver kind of could have been a statement game if it didn't get so close later on. We have as I mentioned earlier, Nick Thornton is out of town, but we've got a little dispatch from him, and I'm gonna play it now.
Okay, you don't have to use this, but I just wanted to send a little dispatch from Cuba that says, fucking Tony Chani. Really? This is why I kind of wanted him to stay, because he scores goals like that. But we won a game. Okay, that's it. Bye.
Essentially, in the last minute, it's sort of like the Whitecaps also were pretty dominant in terms of the amount of goals that they scored, but late in the game, Tony Chani returns, it scores a goal as if just to say, I hope you, y'all remember me.
Yeah, and I feel like you can't really blame the Whitecaps on that one. It was very much a wonder goal from him. But it did make things extremely nervy towards the end, which really illustrated how much this was Vancouver's game. You know, their front three got a lot of space. They were running at full speed. Chicago looked panicked. Vancouver's goals kind of came from that style of play that they liked. And it was also a cap-style game where they just shut off at the end and really let the other team almost take points away from it for no reason. So, you know, very Vancouver Whitecaps all around.
I felt that, you know, this is one of those games where Davies himself was... Davies himself kind of had a little bit of a lack of luck in terms of hitting the crossbar and was not himself able to get onto the score sheet. But I felt his runs, and especially on that first goal, he's not credited for an assist, but he really like keeps the ball in the penalty area and keeps the play moving so that Kai Kamara can get it. And I was impressed with his work sort of in the middle of plays.
Yeah, definitely. I think he was just unlucky not to get on the score sheet there. And it really illustrates just how much they're going to miss him when he inevitably gets bought and sold to Europe.
Now, we were talking that it could be Waston that moves first.
Yeah, that's a pretty terrifying prospect, particularly seeing as how poor Vancouver looked on set pieces this game as well. They're reeling this year from the lack of Parker partnering with Waston.
Yeah.
And as much as I've liked Henry, and you know, I think Mound has been adequate when he's filled in, I don't know. AHA has been okay, but the Whitecaps really benefit from having Weston Parker last year, and the difference without Parker is evident, and I don't even want to imagine what the defense is going to look like without Weston, which I guess today was a bit of a preview but, and a bit of a disappointment.
Those rumors were kind of like not that – those rumors were kind of not that clear, just in terms of either being credible or naming teams or whatever else, but the idea was that the captain and central defender was going to be scouted by several European teams. He missed this game with a left groin strain. I think that I'm trying to not get too worked up about it until I hear more details. But he was certainly of the Costa Rica players at the World Cup. He was one of the ones who I think stood out the most to an international audience.
Yeah, he's definitely a type of defender where I think a lot of teams in Europe especially will be like, oh, it'd be nice to have him. But I don't know if they're really going to be willing to afford what he is valued to the Whitecaps.
Yeah.
They're not going to let go of him cheaply because they know there's not going to be an easy replacement for him. So that's promising in terms of retention. And yeah, certainly his performance during the World Cup, my homerism aside, I mean, the Ticos looked best when he was on the field, and also when Campbell was on the field. It's kind of shocking they played as little as they did in their three games. So it's definitely flattering to Austin in terms of their performance.
The other two players that I was impressed with here from the Whitecaps, you had Kai Kamara with his first goal moving into seventh place all-time in MLS scoring. Which is like, you don't think about it so much because he's been up and down sometimes. And because he, as much as he, well, I guess he's had an up and down season for the Whitecaps as well. But a very important player in the history of MLS. And then you have as well, Jordan Mutch got his first MLS goal. And it was almost he's able to sort of push past the goalkeeper with a couple of defenders on him. I feel like his empty net goal, like, I feel like he, it makes sense now. Like, it could have been one of those ones if he didn't take that extra half second to square up where it just sort of goes into row X. But, man, it feels like he sat there for, like, 3 years with the ball. And it was like, no, no, please don't let everybody get into position before you shoot this empty net goal.
Yeah, you know, if it was a flashier player, I would almost have put it up to just confidence to be like, yeah, I can let them get close to in position again before taking this shot. But the way Mutch was like a Bambi on ice trying to find the ball between his legs was very terrifying at the time.
Montreal continued their strange hot streak after beating Colorado 2-1. Another rough result for Colorado. Not much happened in the first half, I noticed. Safir Tider is really coming into his own. He's had a good season, but in this sort of run of form where they've beaten Orlando and they won last week against Sporting Kansas City, they have he's emerged as a real scoring leader for that.
Yeah, and I think when Montreal started the streak, we were looking a lot at their defense, but this game really illustrated how they're becoming more refined in terms of their offense as well. You know, with Colorado, they were going to have nine guys in front of you, and you couldn't just trot up towards Colorado because there wouldn't be any space there. But they moved the ball laterally really well. They pushed it into space, into the corners to really spread apart Colorado. And I think that just is credit to Remy Gard.
My favorite goal, I was going to call it, it's so silly because there were a lot of pretty goals, but I'm just going to call it my goal of the week because it amused me so much, was Houston tries to, Schubert shoots and tries to block it. Montreal's number 18, who I'm trying to recall the name of right now, tries to block it, but it like sort of just sort of squirts through and it is rolling and the ball is practically like stopped. on the goal line, and Baji roars in and knocks it in from like a foot off the goal line. You could not have a more textbook poacher's goal. And it probably, no, it actually hadn't stopped. I do think it would have continued its meandering way in had it been allowed to do so. I just thought it was funny because Baji is great, but I thought it was funny how hungry he was to add to his tally.
That really reminds me of Teixeira's goal last year where the ball was going in off a shot and Teixeira just sprinted full pace to like get his toe on it on the line and get credit for it.
It's me, I did it. It was Chris Duval who did his best but was not successful on that time. But Montreal did still win.
One thing to mention though about Montreal's run is that, you know, they've had a good bit of easy games here, and their next three or four are all top quality squads with Atlanta, New York City, and I think maybe Dallas. I'm not sure who the third one is. So that'll really be a test for them. I'm sure Remy Gard is going to have them doing bag runs after that, like, really atrocious set piece goal that, in terms of a team that should be organized, should not be letting in. But I mean, Colorado only had two shots in total, so Montreal should be pretty proud of that.
I'm pleasantly surprised. Toronto, after sort of what I would describe as a string of these results, as we were talking about, where they looked like there's something nice that you could say about their performance, but like ultimately they didn't get it. They finally added a point to that with a 2-2 draw against Sporting Kansas City. Great to see Jonathan Osorio doing so well this season. Quaze, who we've discussed before, Nick was mentioning before he took off, he was mad that people were saying American commentators were giving Quazette, like they didn't know how to pronounce his last name, and the home announcing is finally giving the soft T, so that's good. Johan Croise. What else do I have here with this? Zabaleta, on the penalty that is Toronto's first goal against, has a clumsy tackle on Jurso, although he kind of has no chance to get it. It's one of those ones where a player sort of puts his leg in the way so that there's no way that his leg's not going to get kicked, but it ends up being a penalty.
Yeah, that was a pretty clever play there to earn that penalty. Toronto really had no business being in this game. Kansas City should feel a little bit bad that they only got a tie out of it, even though they were missing Siloy and Espinoza for it and had that midweek game as well, where they were working much harder than Toronto did in their midweek game. I think if you kind of compare Toronto and Dallas over the last 3 years, who have both had good seasons and then surprisingly bad ones, Dallas in their game really found an extra gear to score two goals late, and Toronto is not showing that they're able to find that extra gear like almost at all this year.
I still feel that there's something special about Toronto, like every once in a while they'll be able to do this comeback or whatever that lets you know that like the DC 4-4 draw the other week, where it's like something is there. It's not like it's not like for some reason the quality has just all gone to sleep out of this team. But they just can't, they can't just put it, they just can't put it together. I believe I saw a rumor, and I don't know if it was a rumor or I don't know if it was a dream or if it was the truth, but I had heard that Edgar Akeche was moving on.
Oh, I hadn't seen that.
Oh, The Athletic reported that he was leaving on loan to Cadiz today, Tuesday, as we're recording this. I would say that he's one of the players, compared to trying to fit Victor Vazquez in last year into a team that had already made it to the championship, Akeche did not slot into sort of the mainline TFC attack as effectively.
Yeah, there's Not a lot. I think that's going to be missing if this if he is out. It is interesting how much Vasquez's absence has been tallied as the issue with Toronto. But like you mentioned, I mean, they were very successful without him before. And yeah, Mavinga and Moore both being injured is definitely a problem for Toronto. But I mean, I almost feel like they've just given up on this season and they just need to get next year and not blow things up and just kind of like start fresh.
The numbers and the way teams above them, there's really no team that you can knock out for them. There's very little for them to displace, even if they were able to rediscover their form. Yeah, I honestly think that so much of the story, you know, Vasquez is one thing, but I still think that Moore does have a lot to do with it as well. And if Josie is still listed as an absence, that's also key. But it's like going back to the if Josie Altidore is out. Going back to the midweek game, they started with this 3-5-2 that they had used so effectively last year. And then at the like they were being lit up, and at the hydration break in the first half, they switched to the back to the 4-4-2. And they said, oh, I guess it just wasn't working. I don't think it wasn't simply not working. It's like I do feel like that formation relied on the central Drew Moore as the sole central defender because he's so quality.
Yeah, if Toronto is falling apart because Moore is absent, then that's a little bit troubling in terms of the future of this team, since Moore's getting a little bit older in age, like his quality is going to drop off at some point anyways, and if there isn't really any potential replacement lined up who can be half the player he is, then this team might remain off the cliff until they can find someone to replace him.
Yeah. The other thing I loved about this, because Whitecaps fans have had our eye on Johnny Russell ever since he had that 6-0 game against Vancouver, that Russell scores and the commentators yell absolutely calm and collected as he's doing like a front flip.
Yeah, that was perfect.
Another team that, you know, they're up some weeks and down some weeks, but I think are starting to make a name for themselves, are Houston, which completely put away Minnesota with a 3-0 win. That I feel like was a statement win for them. Was another statement for Philippe Senderos, who is a defender who somehow scored three times this week. Twice in this game and once on Wednesday, or once on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, Houston really made the most of set pieces, and it's interesting because they dominated possession, but they didn't really need to do much with it. In the past, I mean, Houston is kind of a fast-breaking team, and in the past people have been like, oh, you know, if Houston has a lot of the ball in your bunker, they kind of don't figure out what to do and end up, you know, suffocating themselves a little bit. But it seems like they're figuring out how to work around that blockade that they've had in the past, and definitely improving on set pieces and maybe breaking more quickly with the ball when you start with a goal kick, that kind of thing is going to be their solution to it.
You had Bonilla Garcia almost put away. It didn't even matter at that point when Albert Ali scores the third goal for Houston, but he loses it at his feet. Elise is able to collect so that it's not only defenders scoring in the game.
Yeah, what a far cry from the Houston that we know so well, where it's being led by defender scoring.
What was the other point? A player hit the the other big announcement for Minnesota is that they've signed another Ibarra. It's a different one. Miguel Ibarra is American, and this new one is Romario Ibarra, who's coming from the Ecuadorian league. I believe it's a midfielder. So Minnesota has been so affected by injuries this year but they really have been doing their best as the second window opens up, to try and plug some of those gaps.
Yeah, I saw this interesting stat that Minnesota has the second highest median wage in the league somehow.
Interesting.
And it's just shocking that they seem to be spending a fair bit of money on the team across the board, but I don't know why it's not. I mean, they're on a worse pace than last year right now.
Well, Ibsen doesn't come cheap.
Yeah, and he certainly seems like he maybe should have based on his midweek miscue. Like, don't just dribble it in the box. Just kick it out. You don't need to like hold possession there.
Yeah. Also, RSL was able to. RSL and Dallas both won in the midweek, but it was RSL who prevailed when they met on the weekend with a 2-0 win. Again, kind of boosting their spirits. You had an early penalty as a player again sort of swung their kick into a foot by mistake instead of the ball, which was absolutely not, intended, but that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, and impressive that Rusnak stepped back up to the spot and had a lot more confidence this time. Had a pretty perfect penalty there.
The final goal, I feel like we saw a lot of stoppage time goals this week, as RSL sealed it up. I don't think that there was a lot. I'm trying to remember if there was a lot going forward. I'm trying to remember if
Yeah,
there was
this
much
game
going
up.
forward. I think it was mostly RSL's game.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas's attack was really held in check by RSL. I think a lot of that was just the number and amount of attacks from RSL prevented Dallas from really being able to get anything started. And that second goal just a result of pushing up late when Dallas was pretty gassed.
The perhaps the most anonymous game of the week was the Seattle New England nil-nil draw. Do you have anything at all you can think of to say about this?
Yeah, it was pretty dire. I noticed that the Revs tweeted their own highlights with just a shrug emoji. I mean, yeah, I don't know. The Revs moved it well, but just couldn't get a good touch to finish. And yeah, feel bad for all the fans who sat through that one.
Yeah, the kind of one of the spotlight, and this is what we were talking about with Armenteros. Samuel Armenteros for Portland scored twice and could have had another in a win against San Jose.
Yeah, that second goal of his was extremely beautiful. But San Jose's defense just liable to lose track of opponents. And with a guy like Armenteros, they're really going to, harm you when you do that.
I was very. We've seen him. We saw very early in the second minute after Portland scored twice off headers from Mabiala last game. They almost got another one very early, but we've also seen a lot of success from Armenteros as well. What do you think that Portland is sort of remodeling themselves as more of a team that is focused around him, or is he just sort of shouldering the load while everyone else is sort of going through their various cycles?
Yeah, I think Portland is definitely trying to figure out how to move forward. Valeri and Armenteros are hooking up extremely well, and just the strength Armenteros has to be able to take on multiple guys or have multiple coverage has been making a lot of space everywhere else. It's a little bit tricky for Portland right now since they do have some guys that are getting a little bit older, aren't great values, probably going to look at some more turnover in the near future, but I think as long as they can keep these guys who are very good at drawing defenders or midfielders toward themselves and making space for everyone else, they don't need to be the quickest team anymore. They don't need to worry too much about being able to get up the flanks really quickly, like they've had success with in the past. This kind of direct approach is working for them. And They'll need to add like a few pieces now with the transfer window opening up, but I think they're pretty well positioned to have a bit of success in the playoffs.
We talked a little bit about Seattle and Toronto trying to drag their way up the table after a laggy start. But Portland had that laggy start too. And the stat that I hear in that I saw brought up was that they are undefeated at 11, which is not really something that I noticed while it was happening.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised by that stat as well, especially looking at Portland's defense, which was playing really flat. They had just huge channels between players, and I'm a little surprised that more teams haven't been able to expose them in that area of the field. But they have just really strong midfield defense right now. I don't know if they plan on keeping Addie for much longer. People have talked about that he might not stick around, but it's really preventing the defense from getting exposed. And I think that might be part of the key to their success right now, is they've been able to rely on their attack, and their midfield's been taking care of their defense, which was leaving them out to dry a bit at the beginning of the year.
After getting defeated at midweek, Atlanta had a relatively normal one against Philadelphia. You had this sort of I have written down that Almiron and Martinez are playing with house money sometimes, like especially on that second goal as Atlanta beat Philadelphia 2-0. You had Miguel Almiron makes Blake commit and then plays across to Josef Martinez, and like it seems so easy.
Yeah, they're just incredible at like timing runs, and even though both sides were very lively, like Atlanta's chances just ended much more open. Players got into spaces where when they received the ball, they were just, it seemed like they could just stand there for a whole minute and no one would even approach them. I feel a little bit of bad for Philadelphia because like Sapong isn't having a good year. They're just not getting the finishing that they would be expected, especially with picking up a cat in the offseason as well. So I think with the chances, like it'll come around, but Atlanta was a frustrating reflection for Philadelphia in terms of, oh, this is what it looks like when everything really clicks really well.
The one thing that I do have to say that I think is true almost across the board when you look at least in the East, where I think the teams, some of the teams in the West, especially at the top, are a little better. But you even look, Philadelphia is a team that, I had written down, if you've got a player, even bad teams have players of the quality of like an Ilsenio. But like Philadelphia is not actually that bad this year. I think they're better than last year.
Yeah, for a long time, their weakness was not having an attacking midfielder to be able to get all the pieces they had collected working together. And now they finally have that working. Like the whole offense is clicking pretty well, but it's the finishing that's letting them off right now, unfortunately. And Blake is doing a great job keeping it all together, but I really think it's going to start clicking for Philadelphia rather than go the other way.
One unfortunate result was LA running up 4 on Columbus. We enjoy seeing the success of Columbus here, and this was not their night.
Yeah, they both gave each other a lot of space. The score line wasn't very fair to Columbus in this one, but Galaxy just worked really hard and were incredibly clinical. I mean, Zlatan's penalty was perfect, if although it probably was a bit undeserved. I'm a bit surprised at Zlatan's more experienced, I think, is what it is.
I have it written down as
But yeah.
Zlatan's wrist of God.
Yeah.
Because I think
But
a ball is coming down and he tries to make it seem as though his hands are not his hands are not intentionally there. But he definitely that ball definitely lands where he wants it to land. And then he's also kind of getting pushed at the same time, so it's judged as a penalty against him.
yeah, he really sold it extremely well. And who really wants to stand up to Zlatan and tell him that he's a liar? So I wouldn't be surprised if that contributed to the ref.
Alessandrini again with 2 great goals, and that is a part of how loaded LA is, that once you're done with Ola Kamara, once you're done with Alessandrini, or once you're done with Ola Kamara and Zlatan, then you have to deal with Alessandrini.
Yeah, he's definitely looked great, even though he's not started every single game, which surprised me a little bit. I think he's one of the pickups of the year, not necessarily in terms of the best value, but someone who is extremely reliably capable. I'll be curious to see how Galaxy enters this trade window now, because they don't have a lot of promising players coming through. And there's a lot of interest in a lot of their pieces, so they need to make a decision. Do we want to just try to make it to the playoffs, see if things can kind of fall our way, just really leverage the whole Zlatan situation, or do they leverage some of the interest in their better players to actually have a proper rebuild?
Not to be outdone by LA Galaxy and their 4-0 win. LAFC won 4-1 at Orlando. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, I think this kind of harkened back to what we discussed last week, where Orlando's defense is very slow, and LAFC's second goal was very indicative of this. They just kind of let attackers stand there and take their chances. It's not looking super promising for Orlando the way things are going.
Adama Diomande just seems again and got 2 goals in the win. Like almost unfair to add to what has already been a stacked lineup.
Yeah, I almost think that LFC should almost stay pat in the transfer window now. They're, like you said, very stacked, and they have such good chemistry between people. Like, there's no reason to really be rotating your lineup besides trying to avoid injuries. Everyone's working well together. Just kind of keep riding that train.
I was also very excited. Well, not very excited, but we talked a little bit about how it's been kind of disappointing the lack of presence of Sasha Kljestan. So I guess if there's a positive, him getting on the score sheet is one.
Yeah, he had a great goal from distance, just fired it in. I think definitely his form is going to be important to Orlando's success. And yeah, like you said, the fact that he's been a bit quiet, I mean, that's must have been troubling for Orlando based on how much they sort of invested having the team work around him.
Somebody please rescue Joe
Oh man, poor guy.
Bandic. The last game of the week was another one of these sort of. It's not the first time that we've seen New York City and New York Red Bulls clash this year. That's always sort of built pretty big, and it's even bigger this. It's gotten even bigger as they occupy the same place in the table. But this one was a real tense 1-0 draw or 1-0 win for New York City.
Yeah, there was just a huge number of chances on both sides here, but both teams were just incredibly stymied from the opposing defenses collapsing immediately on whoever had the ball, not leaving any space for players to make a move. It was really just a masterclass in what people describe as like the good defending that's been forgotten of. Like both sides, even though they were constantly pushing at each other, there was a lot of space, only as you approached the net, and then everyone just got in the way right away.
Yeah, I also thought that you're right that it's both teams' defense, but I really did think that New York City's goal was, I think, against the run of play somewhat.
Yeah, he definitely just found a little bit of space, and it was one of the few chances where he wasn't closed down immediately and really made the most of it.
Now, New York had kind of a stressful week. We've seen management moves when there's been a lack of success this season, but Jesse Marsh left the team, and at first it was, where would you go? And where would you go if it was going to be somewhere else in America, other than a team that really looks like a contender this year? But he's off to RB Leipzig in Germany, which is a co-owned club.
Yeah, it was really interesting to kind of watch how the rumors developed as soon as we heard that he had left the team, because a lot of people's first guess was the national team. He'd be a perfect fit, knows a lot of the young players, has a style that would really complement a lot of the overseas players like Pulisic and McKinn. But obviously it made sense for him to go to Leipzig in terms of just the greater organization. I was very shocked to hear that he became an assistant, though. I don't know if he must have gotten certainty that he'll stick around when their next coach comes in 2019. They're basically just looking for someone for the year right now, since they already have a coach contracted next year, which is a bit of a weird situation. It would have made sense to me to have Marsh there, because he would definitely be looking at it as a step to somewhere else. So I'm not certain how this reflects coaching in North America right now. Maybe it's just one kind of odd situation. You don't want to read too much of it. It's certainly indicative of these large organizations like New York City owning, obviously, Manchester City and Girona, in terms of how coaches and players move between them. And Red Bulls might just be lowest on the priority list here for Red Bulls.
Which is really rough, because they're one of the best teams in the league. It's hard to imagine that, you know, I understand it for Marsh, especially if, and they have said that they do intend to keep him around for when the new manager joins. It's hard to imagine what the greater value to the, you know, to the larger web of the Red Bull clubs is to have somebody join somebody, you know, start the season as an assistant, as opposed to guide another one of their clubs to a potential championship.
Yeah, especially with Leipzig in a Europa League position, are they looking at the exposure for that? I mean, Europa League isn't as important as the Champions League, but it's still going to have a very broad exposure for their brand. I mean, ultimately, like, the team is still advertising a product which can be forgotten about. So it's kind of a weird, like, dead rubber year for RB Leipzig in Germany. Certainly they'll be looking to improve. I don't know how much they value their Austrian team in terms of comparison with New York, since that's a team that's just had a lot of success in their league, doesn't really need any help, and that feels like a good place that you could put someone like Marsh, since they're going to succeed even if Marsh might not have the easiest time transitioning.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I still am hoping for good things for the Red Bulls. They've already appointed Chris Armas, so you know that they organizationally were very prepared to make this move.
Yeah, and I think if you look at New York City with Dom Tourant coming in midseason as well, these transitions don't have to be a stab in the back for the team. I think a lot of people, like you said, want to see New York Red Bulls have success just because they have a good young team. They play a fun style. It's nice for them to have an actual rival with New York City, so that New York City isn't the only successful team in New York. And I think with the Red Bulls having an established style that's working really well, it'll make the transition a lot easier for them moving forward without Marsh, since they won't have to change everything. I think usually when you see a team doing poorly and bringing in the new coach, the coach needs to show that he's actually valuable in terms of his ideas. He has to kind of blow everything up, which makes it harder to succeed immediately. So this probably isn't going to be that much of a speed bump for the team.
Oh, I'm seeing there's another move. There's a Minnesota have signed another designated player, Angelo Rodriguez, the Colombian forward from Club America, has joined up. So they, we talked a little bit about them loading up, and I guess they really are doing that.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see, too, this flow from Mexico to the MLS now as well.
Carlos Vela, I think, was definitely in the World Cup one of the strikers that was the most, that, like, didn't, other than Waston, who is fine, although the, you know, Costa Rica was already up by that point, the least embarrassing player for MLS on the world stage.
Yeah, probably Vela. He did very well. And, I mean, also, being an important part of that attack showcased his ability really well. I mean, Svensson for Seattle also had a very good World Cup, but that team didn't get as much attention for his play since that they were really playing well together as a unit.
What would you say was your team of the week?
I would probably go with Montreal in their game against Colorado. They, I think, are really shaping up well in terms of Remy Gard's vision, and it's sort of fun to watch. And admittedly, it is against Colorado, who have struggled this year, obviously. But if Montreal kind of keeps in this direction, I think they are definitely going to get into the playoffs and maybe push up a little bit.
I have to say that I was the most impressed by Real Salt Lake. I've been down on them this year, but they got two big wins. And they in what is an ever shifting Western Conference, they now all of a sudden have ended up fourth.
Yeah, and some of that is definitely just the Western Conference being in turmoil outside of Kansas City and Portland and LAFC. Really, it's pretty wide open for RSL, for Houston, for Vancouver, for the Galaxy even, and any team like RSL that's going to take its chances when it has them. They've done really well at home. They're going to do well. Really, RSL just needs to start improving their road form because I think they're 1-7-1, which is not going to help you get into the playoffs at that rate if you were around more competition. Thankfully, Houston showed last year that you can get into the playoffs with a terrible road record, so.
I feel like with all of these additions, what's going to be crazy this year, last year I would say that you'd have some players that are going to miss the play, some teams are going to miss the playoffs that you really wouldn't miss. But there are going to be some great teams and some great players that are not going to the dance. If LA Galaxy can't hold in their goals conceded, they're not going to make it.
Yeah, and I think of San Jose in terms of that as well. They're definitely not going to make the playoffs, but Amarikwa is such a great player. He just really drives San Jose, and it's just a shame that he never really gets the spotlight since he's kind of a team that struggles defensively, especially, and only has 2 wins against Minnesota, which is a bad sign.
What was your goal of the week?
My goal of the week was Armenteros's second for Portland. That beautiful feed by Valeri, and just the way he held off the two guys, had a very quick release, in double coverage. That's just a beautiful goal.
No doubt. And mine, as I noted, was despite its lack of technical grace, was the Bocce goal. You were talking about San Jose. At the bottom of the Eastern Conference table is DC United, who finally, after weeks of discussing it and after having as many as 6 games in hand, if you can believe it, will be getting their new star signing Wayne Rooney up and running this weekend, and their new stadium, which has also been long discussed, up and running this weekend. What do you see for them as they look to reboot their campaign?
Yeah, I mean, the joke for DC with Rooney has been, can he play defense? Because that's their major issue. I don't know if DC is going to be able to outscore their opponents despite how good Rooney might end up being. One thing DC can maybe take heart in is that when SKC had their stadium open midseason, they had an atrocious record going into it and were really buoyed with their lengthy home run and getting a lot of those games late in the season. So if DC can pull out some wins, I mean, they might be on the knife edge of making the playoffs, but I don't know if Rooney's going to be able to provide enough in terms of changing the issues this team has to make them capable of making the playoffs.
I feel like they went so long, and it wasn't all their fault. There was a lot of back and forth as to why that Their stadium deal didn't happen when they hoped it would. I feel like for years and years we've said, "Oh, I hope DC gets their scenario in order because they're such an important part of the league." But it feels like they've done themselves so much damage, even in a season like this where it wasn't like calamity related damage, it was just a lack of presence.
Yeah, and I think that makes a good point about how, as much as a lot of people don't care about DC because they haven't had success in a while, they are one of those foundational teams of the league, and it is nice to see when, a team that's had so much success has brought great players like Echeverria into the league to really expand its appeal to a lot of people. You don't want to see a team that's had that success in the past just wallow at the bottom of the standings for that long. I think this will be obviously really great for them, not just in terms of having a new stadium, but just getting out of their situation, which was really not ideal.
As we look at the potential doom of Columbus in a potential relocation, it does sometimes feel like the league has done a great job of being able to create something out of nothing, but less of a good job of promoting the great brands that they have always had.
Yeah, there's been so much focus recently about getting new teams, new markets, new exciting stars. And if you think back about the teams that had success, like how much does MLS ever market SKC? Colorado Rapids have an MLS Cup. Those are teams that have kind of fallen to the side in terms of the image that MLS is projecting. A lot more of the focus now is on Atlanta and New York City and Red Bulls and maybe to some extent Toronto and Dallas. And I understand that leagues want to promote their most successful teams, but there's certainly something to be said for appreciating like what has built your league.
Absolutely. Where can we find you on the internet?
Well, Andrew, you can find me on Peach. I'm at Ricardo B.
The well-used, well-loved social networking site that maybe has 13 members. Who could say? I wanted to say thank you so much for your time these past 2 weeks. It has been a pleasure to have you, and you are welcome back anytime.
I really hope that Nick gets more vacations because it's been a pleasure.
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I'm an editor at Howler Magazine, howlermagazine.com, and you can find Nick upon his return at That's So MLS on Twitter. You can find this podcast at thatsomls.com and on iTunes, wherever podcasts are found. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And until next week, don't get sent off.
Always good advice.